You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I have an announcement before I start giving you my opinions on what I think are the two leading stories. One is we will not have a show tomorrow because of the monthly Dallas County Community College District Board of Trustees meeting. So a number of shows, including mine, have been preempted. We will have a show Wednesday, but it's still up in the air whether or not we're going to have a show Thursday and Friday, for the simple reason that Thursday is the faculty and staff have career development training, if you will, and supposedly most, if not all, of the campus is going to be closed. And then Friday, the buildings are supposedly going to be closed because the faculty and staff do community service. Now, we're up in the air as to what's going to happen Thursday and Friday. I think it's, you know, if the faculty and staff want to be developed, fine, but that doesn't mean the campus should really shut down. Students have to learn, they have to study, they have to go to the computer labs, and the studio should be open. But I'm not the president of this university, nor am I the chancellor, but I think their perspective is rather narrow. It needs to be broadened because life doesn't stop because some people, the staff, get a training exercise. The students have to study and they have to learn, and the campus should be open for business. Now, with that commentary as to what's happening at Richland College, we're definitely going to have a show today and Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday are up in the air. I'm hoping to have a show Friday for sure. Thursday is somewhat iffy, but I don't really know yet. So we'll play it by ear. And now, what am I going to cover today? I was studying last night geologic time, and that gives you a perspective because the geologists use is BP. Now, we're not talking British Petroleum, BP, before present. The Earth is approximately 4.6 billion years old. 4.6 billion years old. And geologists who study things like minerals, rocks, rock formations, fossils, have both relatively dated various rocks, mainly using fossils, the fossil record, the rock record. And they've divided that long period into both eons, eras, periods, epochs. I'm not going to give you a lecture in geology, but the point that you quickly see is our time on this Earth is like a blink of an eye if you look at how long the planet has been in existence. And the best place to see that, and I have not had the opportunity, is to go to the Grand Canyon, where you see the Colorado River has eaten into the rock layers, and you see a long stretch of the history, the geologic history of this planet in the rock formations. Now, I'm giving you that because there are two stories today. One will work itself out in the next 30 days at the outside, and the other, I think, is going to be many, many, many years. What I'm referring to as to the first story, and I'll cover that first because they are related in some tangential way. House Speaker John Boehner was on television Sunday on the Fox News program with Chris Wallace, and he made it very, very clear to Chris Wallace, as a matter of fact, three times, that the House has passed its bill as far as funding is concerned for the Department of Homeland Security. And it's done its job under the Constitution, and now it's up to the Senate to do its job. And what are we talking about? We have Democrats, Democratic senators, that won't even let debate start on the Senate bill pertaining to the same subject matter. They're obstructing. That's what they're doing. The fact that the majority of the American people do not want what President Obama is doing, which is illegal, unconstitutional, and he even admitted it 22 times. There's not a difference of opinion here. It's just that we have a president that is becoming increasingly a tyrant and dictator because he doesn't have the authority under the law to do what he's doing. What is he doing? He's giving legal status to illegal aliens. Now, I cover that in glorious detail on the Friday show. So this is somewhat of an update because not only did Boehner make it very, very clear, the ball is in the Senate, and it's up to the Republican leadership to get moving. And that means Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. But the problem, ladies and gentlemen, is not the Republican Party. The problem is the obstructionist tactics of the Democratic Party. And if that means the Department of Homeland Security gets shut down, so be it. What are we talking about? The Department of Homeland Security has about 230,000 people working for it. And a lot of those are, when you go to the airport, the thousands standing around, the TSA. So the budget for the entire Department of Homeland Security, as well as the rest of the government, has been passed through the end of this fiscal year. All we're talking about is the funding for that portion of the Department of Homeland Security that is responsible for giving out these cards, these work permits, and that's what they're called, but technically they're employment authorization documents. And if you go to my last show Friday, I have pictures of both the new and the old cards, as well as the green card, which is permanent legal status. What the president is trying to do, and what the Democrats are trying to do, is increase their voter base. That's what this is about. And they want to do it before the 2016 elections. So a first step is to provide legal status to illegal aliens that under the law should be deported. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, or gray areas here. The only argument you'll get is to how many. And it's not 11 million, it's 30 to 50 million. That's the secret that drives me nuts, that on both political parties will not challenge that number when it is challengeable. No one believes it's 11 or 12 million, although they keep saying it. And the reason why they keep the number low is not to scare the American people. They don't want you to know the truth. That's what we're talking about here. Because if they told you the truth, the American people would be marching in the streets. Because we have today between 20 and 30 million American citizens that can't find a permanent full-time job. Yet, we have 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. They don't all work. A lot of them are children. A lot of them are mothers staying home with the children. But at least 20 million or more are working every day. And they're taking the jobs that American citizens should have. I see it on this campus every day. Every single day I see illegal aliens. There's no point for me to call ICE. You know why? They're not going to come down. They don't enforce the law. Let me give you a statistic that will bring this point home. Remember, Immigration Customs Enforcement has responsibility for the enforcement of immigration law within the country, while the U.S. Border Patrol, as the name clearly suggests, is responsible for enforcement of immigration law at the borders. But internally, such as in Dallas and other cities throughout the country, it is ICE that's responsible for enforcement. How many officers do you think they have? It's 5,000. 5,000 are going to deal with 30 to 50 million. And even if you believe in the big lie of 11 million, they can't do it. That's why the laws are not being enforced. And that is what the American people want. They want the rule of law. Laws enforced. And under both the Republican and Democratic parties, ICE has not been able to, they simply don't have the resources. And that's what I was saying last time. There are over 700,000 law enforcement, that city, town, county, sheriffs, you name it, across the country. In other sections of the law, and it's up to the local city or town or county, whether or not they're going to help the feds, but they usually do, enforcing other sections of the law. On this, the federal government has said, we don't want your help, yet they need our help. We need to increase dramatically the enforcement of immigration law. That's the problem. They can secure the borders, and they need to. That's a first step. But the bigger problem is to go after the employers. Because if you go after the employers, including right here on this campus and the district, that'll stop it real quick. When we're talking fines, and that's what it is, that stops it. Because no one wants to pay fines, especially stiff fines. The problem is they know it's not being forced. And that's what the American people deeply resent. Because the jobs that these illegals have, they should have. It's our country. It's not illegal aliens' country. So go home. Please go home. Unfortunately, neither the Republican Party or Democratic Party has clearly gotten the message. And they better start listening and they better start getting results or we'll throw them out. We'll get another third party and throw these bums out. If they're more concerned with their donor base, in other words, the very wealthy, and want to be bought and paid for, and that's what Obama is. He's a front man. He was bought and paid for way before he ever ran for president. Without the money, and we're talking big money here, largely from the financial sector, but also from unions and attorneys and the executives of large corporations, many in the House, the Senate, as well as the president, would never have gotten elected because they are bought and paid for. Not all of them. Just most of them. And they do the bidding of the people that make the huge campaign contributions. So what the American people want is that their representatives focus in on the general welfare of the American people, and it's not in the interest of the American people, the American workers, you and me, to have 30 to 50 million illegal aliens here now, and if you do not enforce the law, in other words, go after the employers, that'll double in another 10 to 20 years. And that is really the plan. It's a dual-track plan. First, to increase the number of legal immigration, and I'm for legal immigration. I'm not for the million that they have every year. I think it should be somewhere between 250,000 if the unemployment rate is above 6%, and if we're near full employment rates of 3% or lower, then as many as 500,000. But that's just my opinion. There are other people that think it should be zero. There are other people that should be just a flat amount. But most Americans, again, are not in favor of the million figure. Yet we have the money interest, the special interest, that want it increased to 2 million and then 3 million every year for the next 10 to 20 years. That's what I mean by the dual track. One is we'll get more and more and more every year of illegal aliens first getting legal status and then becoming citizens. And the Democratic Party has sold out their own base, and they're more concerned about illegal aliens getting legal status because they view them as future Democratic voters. So there's no hope with the Democratic Party. You know, my family was largely Democrats. If my parents were alive today, they would not be Democrats. Because the Democratic Party has sold out their own working class origins. And that's the simple fact of the matter. Blacks are starting to wake up. Hispanic citizens are starting to wake up. Whites are starting to wake up. And they're saying, wait a minute, we're citizens, but you're more concerned about these illegal aliens having jobs. Excuse me, how dare you? And that's the right question. How dare you? As long as they can get away with it and get reelected, and you reelect them, they're going to get away with it. And that's exactly what the Democrats in the Senate are doing today and have been doing. They've been blocking the will of the people that want to stop what President Obama is doing. What he's doing is clearly illegal and unconstitutional. You have 26 states that have a lawsuit against him. Who does he think he is? Apparently he thinks he can get away with it. I say shame on him, and I hope they impeach him. Because what he's doing is an impeachable offense, and that's one of the remedies. Yet we have, sad to say, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee saying that's off the table. Excuse me, sir. Read the Constitution. There are only two remedies. You cut off the money or you impeach him. So either you cut off the money for this nonsense or you impeach him. Whether or not you can get a conviction is not the point. You need to stop him. You need to slow him up. I think it's going to only get worse. He has less than 2 years, and he's pushing, pushing, pushing. He's not up for election. He doesn't care. He doesn't care, and neither does the Democratic Party. They've sold out their own voter base, and they have them fooled. Why? Because the television networks don't tell you the truth, don't connect the dots. So as far as I'm concerned, they could shut down the entire Department of Homeland Security. And who is to blame for that? It is the Democratic Party. What we're really talking about is really not funding the money for the 30,000 people that work for the Department of Homeland Security and pass out or process these cards. Now, they do other things, but that's one of their main functions. So we need to have a law passed, and that's exactly what Congress is doing, because it is their responsibility, to tell the president in no uncertain terms, you can't do this. That's what we're talking about. You're violating the law, and we're not going to provide you any funding so you can violate the law by providing these people with cards, with primarily work permits or employee authorization documents that looks like a driver's license. It's an ID card. So I've been very critical of Speaker Boehner, but I'm glad he's shown a little backbone yesterday. And apparently Chris Wallace needs to get his ears cleaned because he seemed to be having trouble. And that's the trouble with the media, including those on Fox. The obstructionists here, the aiders and abettors of these criminal activity, is the Democratic Party and especially the Democrats in the Senate. This bill has not come to a vote. They're doing this usually if you have delaying tactics. It's done at the back end. They're doing this on the front end. Can't even start the debate because of the procedures. I'm not going to go in the weeds in that, but that's the problem. So it's up to Mitch McConnell to start twisting arms. They know how the game's played. If you don't get to vote, you're not getting a dime, a penny for whatever your pet projects are or whatever nominee you want. Want to play hardball? We'll play hardball. That's what we need. It's time for Senator McConnell to show a little backbone himself. Beat a little heads. Maybe that Senator Reid, the minority leader, didn't get the message. I know he apparently fell off an exercise machine, or at least that's the story. To me, it looks like he was driving and ran off the road and got injured, but that's speculation on my part, and accidents do happen. But he is the lead obstructionist, and the American people are watching, and they're waiting patiently, but not forever. And if Congress cannot get its act together and stop this, I think what you're going to be seeing in the next 5 to 10 years is one, if not both parties, will dramatically decline in terms of the votes they get and ultimately dwindle. We need a new political party. Neither political party really has its heart in it as far as controlling illegal immigration. Why? The Democrats, they look at it as more votes. Let's face it, if they could get 30 million of the 50 million illegals that are here to vote for them, they're going to win the House, the Senate, and the presidency from here on out. And that's why they're pushing it. They're not going to give up. They're not going to compromise. This is a battle, folks. This is something you play for keeps. We're talking about the future of our country. And there's some that's so short-sighted that want to throw open the doors. And then they wonder why we have such a lousy economic recovery. And it is the worst recovery since the Great Depression. And the economy is growing significantly less than the historical trends of roughly 3.1 to 3.5%, depending on which time series you want to use in terms of calculating that. So I applaud Speaker Boehner, and I hope everyone got the message. The question is, what will the Senate do? I don't know. You need leadership, but leadership means playing hardball. And I really don't know if the Republican leadership, they don't really want to play hardball. Because I think in their heart of hearts, they want open borders. They're trying to finesse it. They're trying to play this game of trying to talk one way, but walk another. That's why I said you need to watch out as to what they're doing. And they have a series of bills, the House does, and it will go to the Senate on immigration. And you're going to have to read you don't have to read it. Most people won't read it. But you got to pay attention because they're going to sneak several things right by you in the details, just like they did with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which is turning out to be a disaster. That also needs to be repealed at the first opportunity. We'll see if the Supreme Court, by its ruling as to the subsidies, does do away with it, because if they go one way, it literally pulls out the financing of these subsidies. And once that is pulled out, the people that were counting on those subsidies wouldn't get it, and then it literally falls apart. But that's a separate show. So that's an update from really Friday's show. What I really wanted to focus on is the killings in Libya of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians. They were beheaded, and their videos and their photographs on the internet. They were beheaded by a militia group affiliated with the Islamic State. Libya is a failed state. It is in chaos, and you have various militia groups vying for power, which was and should have been anticipated when you overthrew Gaddafi. And remember, it was at the initiation of the Obama administration, and particularly under the leadership, if you can call it that, of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, that the 40-year dictator, and he was brutal, was overthrown. I didn't cry for Muammar Gaddafi being overthrown. The problem was what came next, and it's appearing to be a lot worse. We don't have an embassy anymore in Libya because we have a lot of Islamic jihadist terrorists that are fighting each other, and most of them would kill an American. If they could get a hold of an American, they would behead him. So as a result of the failed economic, but it's really the economic and foreign policy of Obama, that we have the situation in Libya and really throughout the Middle East. So as much as I detested Gaddafi, you did have a stable regime, and the only one he was trying to kill were the rebels. You see, the bill of goods that the American people were sold by the Obama administration, largely from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, that Libya was on the verge of genocide. There's only one problem. There was no evidence of that. In other words, that's a story. A story is a polite way to say it was another lie. And that's the problem with this administration. They're just a group of liars. They make it up as they go along to suit whatever they're trying to accomplish. And then they wonder why nobody trusts them. I don't trust them. I don't trust anything that this administration says. They have countlessly lied, misled the American people, and Libya is just one example. And 21 Egyptian Christians died, Coptic Christians died. They were beheaded on a beach on the coast of Libya. Their heads were cut off with a knife. They were kidnapped in December and executed yesterday. And we've seen the results in the photographs and videos that were released by these monsters. Now, I said on the last, I believe it was the last show, sometimes the shows blend, what should we do about the Islamic State? And I listened to a lot of talk shows, morning, evening, early morning, evening, and the afternoon. There's some hours I really, because I'm busy, simply cannot listen. And I mainly listen for people calling up, because this show is not equipped for call-ins. We simply don't have a large enough audience, and because of that, we don't take calls. It would take a screener, and we don't have the size of the audience that we need, because really less than 2% actually call, and then when you screen them out, you're looking at a tiny, tiny percentage. As much as I would like call-ins, you need a critical mass of listeners. You know, for example, I was listening to Charlie Jones, it's not a show, call it Texas Overnight, something like that. But Charlie Jones has been the talk show host for that. And I like Charlie, although I miss Mike. Mike was his guest on, actually, that's how I got interested in the Charlie Jones show, is when on Monday morning, we're talking 12 to 4 in the morning, most people would think of it Sunday night, he used to have a gentleman from East Texas that would call that had really a similar background to mine. He was a CPA, which I am too, but he was very, very successful in the oil industry. He represented a number of companies. I was really a sole practitioner. But anyway, I was always interested in what Mike had to say. Unfortunately, Mike has other business opportunities, and he hasn't been on the show for at least a couple of years. So I'm somewhat in the habit of listening to Charlie Jones, especially on Sundays, but I was studying my geology, and I kept shutting him off because he was driving me crazy. I seldom call talk shows. I've called his show once, got on, was on the Ebola, gave him some information, and got off. But I was noticing two things. One, he had a lot of callers, but a lot of them I can hear by their voices that they're regulars. Some shows, they only allow you to call once a week. And some regulars are good, some, but he had a number of those. for some reason last night. But he was going on and on and on about the Islamic State. And we need to wake up and comparing it to Nazi Germany. Well, I think the threat is very serious. I've done a lot of reading on them. Think I, as best I can as an outsider, understand where they're coming from. They're not good guys. They're evil. And they're a threat to all the nations surrounding Syria and Iraq. They're Sunni fundamentalists, and they're not tolerant of any other religions, whether it's Christians, Jews, or other Muslims, such as the Shia, that are the majority in Iraq and the majority in Iran. And you need to understand, get the big picture. Islam consists of roughly 1.6 billion people. That's a lot of people. It's not just in the Middle East, though. It's in Southeast Asia, Indonesia, for example. So there are a lot of Muslims, and it's one of the fastest growing religions. But there's diversity there. But the majority are 89 to 90%. Are Sunni Muslims. Now, you have different sects of Sunni Muslims, and that's what you need to understand first. But the major rivalry are between the Sunni majority, and they are the majority in the Middle East, and they are in the majority of the world, are Sunni Muslims. The minority, about 10 to 11%, are Shia. And they don't like each other, to put it mildly, and they've been killing each other for decades, actually centuries. There's no love lost between them. And where they have the opportunity and the situation, they'll kill each other. And that's those fundamental facts you need to understand. But keep in mind, Iran is predominantly, overwhelmingly Shia, and the majority in Iraq are Shia. You see, Iraq as a nation was formed after World War I. If you were really going to draw a map or redraw a map, you wouldn't put the Shia with the Sunni or the Sunni with the Shia because they occupy distinct portions of Iraq. Now, Baghdad is very much mixed, but you still, the majority are Shia, as is most of southern Iraq. Western and northern Iraq are Sunni, as is most of Syria. Now, I give you this background because you need to understand it. And what's going on today in Iraq and Syria is a religious, sectarian civil war. And each side is brutal to the other side. And the Islamic State, who used to be called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, when the United States troops were there, and under the surge, we literally destroyed most, not all, of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. The ones we didn't kill, we put in prison, but some escaped to Syria, and now they're back, they're rested, they're retrained, rearmed, and they're calling themselves the Islamic State. And how many are there? Who knows? The estimates are low side, 5 to 10,000, high side, 50, most likely probably about 30,000. And they're spread out in both Syria and Iraq, in some of the major cities in the northern western portion of Iraq and in the eastern portion of Syria. And they're both, the Islamic State is trying to overthrow the regime in Iraq that is dominated by Shia, as well as the regime in Syria under Assad, which is Alawite, which is a sect of Shia. And Iran is helping Assad through its proxy, Hezbollah, in Lebanon, that's also supporting the Assad regime in Syria. That's a quick summary, in a nutshell, of who the players are. Now, what is driving me nuts? I wish we could, with a laser beam, kill every one of those Islamic statists, those Islamic jihadists, if we could. The problem is, they learned you can't fight a conventional war when your enemy outnumbers you. You need to hide amongst the general population. And you need to get the trust of the general population. If you can't get the trust, you need them to fear you. So what they've been doing as they take territory is they terrorize the local population. They don't allow any dissent at all. And they are engaged in ethnic cleansing, trying to drive out people that don't share their religion. That's why Christians, Jews, Shia, and people of other religious faith faiths are fleeing the towns and cities that the Islamic State takes over because they don't want to see themselves and their family killed, whether it's a bullet in the head or being beheaded. So they flee if they can. Many can't, but many have fled. So that's the state of play or the situation in Iraq and Syria. And it's spreading. The Islamic State is now in Libya as well. And their stated goal is to establish what's called a caliphate, where Sharia law, which is their religious law, would be the law of the land. And it would be ruled by a caliph, and think of it as a dictator. But that's what they're about. They're fundamentally Islamic. And as much as President Obama and his administration doesn't want to admit that, if you want to defeat your enemy, you need to understand what makes them tick, what motivates them. And their religion is motivating them. They also want to kill Americans. So I understand the threat. If anything, I appreciate it more than most. And yes, it needs to be stopped. So I'm in essence in agreement with most of the people that call in, as well as the talk show hosts. But where do I part company? And this is a very important point. What do you think those YouTube videos are showing the beheading of Americans? There have been four that have been killed so far. And they've killed some Europeans, some British, now Egyptians, a Jordanian pilot. The overwhelming majority of those that they have killed, however, are Iraqis, people that are Islamic or Muslim, but they're Shia. And that's an important point to understand. The people that have really been persecuted are their fellow Muslims. Unfortunately, the ones that they go after are Shia. They also go after Sunnis, though, and that needs to also be emphasized. They don't brook any dissent. This is a totalitarian regime. You either do what they say, want you to do, or they kill you, or cut off your hands, or torture you. That's what they're about. They're evil, folks. That's why you have to stop tyranny in its tracks, because if it gets out of hand, it leads to this. So I'm stating this up front. What are we dealing with? It is a religious sectarian civil war where one side, really both sides, but the ones that get all the attention because they're posting these, what I call it, it's propaganda, but it's very provocative propaganda. Now, why do you think they're doing that? Part of it is the sheer element of terror. It does strike fear in the people that are there, that can't get away from it. And they're encouraging others from other nations, including the United States, to join them. And they're training them, and they're getting experience killing. And at some point, they're going to be sending these people back to Europe, United Kingdom, the United States, Australia, wherever they came from. So why in the long term, it's definitely a threat. Today, the Islamic State is a threat to the people living in Iraq and Syria, as well as the people in the surrounding countries, including Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Lebanon, and Israel. They don't like Israel either. They want to establish the caliphate throughout the Middle East. Even though they were called Al-Qaeda Iraq initially, they have changed their focus from trying to engage in terrorist attacks all over the world to focusing on conquering territory where they're at. And this is nothing new. Terrorism is nothing new. Whether it's the Moguls, you know, throughout history, there have been groups that literally, they would capture towns, burn it to the ground, loot, rape, take treasure. If you're lucky, you became a slave. If not, they just killed you. Men, women, and children. They showed no mercy. And that's what they were about. And we've had it throughout the history of mankind. And these are primarily young men, teenagers, and people in their 20s. Some, it was religious-based. Others, it was ethnic-based. But the results were the same. Think of it as good versus evil. And if they could get a hold of you, they would kill you. So it's nothing new. And the brutality now, you can watch it on YouTube if that is your cup of tea. And there are photographs as well as videos. But what are they trying to do? Why are they publishing these YouTube videos? They're really posting it all over the internet. Why? There are two primary reasons. One is they're trying to get recruits, saying, hey, look, we're successful. We're taking over territory. We have arms. We have money. We control cities and towns. Join us. on a religious crusade, on a jihad, a struggle, a holy war against not only the Christian crusaders, but the Shia in Iraq and Iran. Guess what? A lot of young people are attracted to that, and they use religion to manipulate these people that join them, and they convince people to become suicide bombers. They attacked an airbase in Iraq where there were about 300 Marines. Fortunately, the Marines were able to kill them or chase them off. Now, where do I part company with these people on that are calling in, as well as some of the talk show hosts? I agree, we need to stop them. I have not heard anyone that says we shouldn't stop them. Where I differ as to who should stop them. It shouldn't be United States soldiers, Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, whatever. And I'll even go further, it shouldn't be CIA and special operators. Now, why do I say that? That is exactly what the Islamic State wants. They want us to intervene once again in the Middle East. And we've intervened several times in the Middle East. They want us to come back. Now, you might say they have a death wish. Are they crazy? We could kill them. We have overwhelming force. That's not how they view it. They're not going to fight a conventional war because they know they would lose it. They have had the experience of a surge in Iraq where they lost. They were, for all intensive purposes, defeated, killed. If they're lucky, they fled. Otherwise, they were imprisoned if they weren't killed. They have that experience. Their leader today was in prison. Eventually, he was released. Big mistake there, but the Iraqis released him. And now he's learned the lessons. You don't fight a conventional war where your opponent, because of his technological advantages in terms of armaments, air power, artillery, and armor, if you were to try to match that, you would be destroyed. And they know that. They're not foolish. So what do? They fight what's called an unconventional war. Some call it a guerrilla war, where they hide amongst the people, live in the same apartment complexes that the citizens of these cities and towns live. And they not only live there, but hide their munitions. There are other places. They have warehouses. They have bunkers. But they know a direct confrontation with our military would, again, repeat the defeat. That's not what they want. They want us back there for one primary reason, to kill us and to restart the unconventional war, but now better armed, better trained, and now experienced. And they know that the United States and its people don't want to come back. We have better things to do with our tax money as well as our soldiers. And that's the point. I always ask the question, why are we in the Middle East? Who benefits? Why are we in the Middle East? There's only one answer. It's oil. There's nothing else that the American people want or need, or for that matter, the Europeans want or need from the Middle East but oil, and to a lesser extent, natural gas. That's what they have, and they have a lot of it. If you add Iran and Iraq together, that's over 20% of the world's reserves. You add Saudi Arabia, that's another 40%. In Kuwait, it's oil, folks. That's why we're there. That's why we've sent troops in the past. I know some of you think, well, we're really there to overthrow these regimes. Well, yeah. But what happens when we do? All contracts between the previous regime and other parties are null and void. And then our corporations come in and develop the oil fields and run them. Because they don't have people that can do that. They have some, but they need capital, namely investment, from our major oil companies. And it's not just ours, it's the Europeans as well, as well as the Chinese. And that needs to be said and repeated over and over again. That is why the United States, Western Europe, and other countries intervenes in these countries. And guess what? The people there resent it deeply. They don't like to be occupied. And the people that favor government intervention politically in the United States, for example, the Republican neoconservatives, they're the biggest warmongers. They're the ones that are pounding the drums and want us to get back there. They never learn the lesson because they're focused on one thing, the oil. American people have said, been there, done that, no more. We're not sending our sons and daughters and our tax dollars to the Middle East to be wasted. We have plenty of coal, plenty of natural gas, plenty of oil. And if we don't have enough of that, we have neighbors, Canada and Mexico, and other countries that we can get our oil from. In other words, the United States should not again, once again, intervene in the Middle East. It never ends well. It never ends well. Because all we were when we were there was a referee trying to keep the Shia from killing the Sunnis and the Sunni trying to kill the Shia. And they're both killing us. And the American people have said enough is enough. We shouldn't be going back. As much as I want these SOBs destroyed and eliminated, and they need killing, we shouldn't be the ones doing it. So the question is, who should be? The answer is, ladies and gentlemen, the countries surrounding Syria and Iraq that the Islamic State, if it could, would take over. Who am I talking about? Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Lebanon, and obviously Syria and Iraq. Because what's their goal? To have a caliphate where Sharia law is the law of the land. That's their objective. So how do we stop them? Those countries that are predominantly Sunni need to go on the offensive, have an alliance, preferably with the United States staying out of it, and destroy the Islamic State. Now, some of you that are aware of what's going on, I say, wait a minute, that sounds nice, but there's a somewhat of a minor problem here. All of those countries are Sunni. They don't like Iran, and they don't like the Shia Iraqi government. So they don't really want to go after the Islamic State. But they have a problem. The Islamic State wants to go after them because they consider those nations and their leaders as corrupt. They want to overthrow the Saudi royal family in Saudi Arabia, as well as the monarchy in Jordan. And they also want to overthrow the corrupt regime in Egypt. That's their goal. What should the United States do? Not this strategic patient nonsense of the Obama administration. Strategic patience in basketball is called running out the clock. And remember, he has less than 23 months before he's not president. And then he can play as much golf as he wants. That's what this president is about, running out the clock. He can't call it that. So he dresses it up as strategic patience. And you can read, it's I think about 29-page document, and it came out after 5 years, spelling out, you know, the threats and what we're going to be doing about them. Terrorism is about a page. Actually, I only saw a couple of paragraphs. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, is we have a president that's not a leader. He's a lawyer. Not a very good lawyer either, but he's certainly not a leader. A large percentage of the responsibility that's happened now in Libya and Iraq is a direct result of government intervention by the United States. And yet we have people calling up talk shows as well as talk show hosts that are advocating, we need to go in there again. We need to destroy the Islamic State. We need to bomb them. It's total war, just like in Nazi Germany. Not everyone in Germany was a Nazi, but every German, how do they say it? Not every German was a Nazi, but every Nazi was a German. They're trying to make that equivalence. Excuse me. First of all, the Islamic State, in terms of numbers, is even at the high side, is less than 50,000. There are literally tens of millions of innocent civilians. And you want to go and bomb them? You do? What do you think that's going to result in the long term? You got it. More Islamic statists. More of these Islamic jihadists. That's what they're trying to do. Don't play their game, is my point. They're deliberately trying to provoke you. That's what these videos are about, to get you mad, to get you emotional. And believe me, people calling, including the talk show host, are emotional about this. I get it. I don't like him either. But the last thing I want to do is to send your sons and daughters back over there to get killed, and they will get killed. They will get beheaded and kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people and compound the problem. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to provoke a fight. And they don't care if they live or die. And that's a problem. They send suicide bombers to attack a air base where we have 300 Marines training the Iraqis. And we also have fighter jets there. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to take the long view, and you have to understand the enemy and what's going on there. And you have countries in the region that are directly threatened by the Islamic State. And the problem is, initially, some of the money and some of the arms came from where? Saudi Arabia. Well, they'll deny it, but there are people in Saudi Arabia that were funding the Islamic State. As the same in Qatar, and it was through Kuwait. And guess what? The United States government was also shipping arms to the Syrian rebels, the so-called FSA, the Free Syrian Army. The problem is a large percentage, overwhelming majority, were Islamic jihadist terrorists associated with Al-Qaeda, and they changed their name to Al-Nusra, and now you have Al-Nusra and the Islamic State. They're rivals in Syria, but they're confusing you. No one's hands here are clean. What we have to do is to deal with the Islamic State, but we should be using the armed forces of these nations. They have the infantry, they have the jets, the artillery, and the weapons to totally destroy the Islamic State. They need leadership, they need direction, and we can help them out with intelligence. The problem is we have a president that simply does not want to be involved. As he keeps saying, they need to stand up. And I agree, they need to stand up. And if the Iraqi Shia can't stand up, then the Sunnis in the area, both in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, need to go on the offensive, form an alliance, and destroy with the objective of the utter, complete destruction of the Islamic State. By now, you need to understand the Islamic State takes no prisoners. A better way to say it, they take prisoners, they torture them. If they can't get ransom for them, they kill them. And that's what they're doing. They will kidnap people. If they determine that they might be able to get a ransom, they'll try for a ransom. And if they don't get a ransom, they kill them. The majority of the people that they capture and kidnap, they kill. Some right on the spot. When it's abundantly clear that you really have no money, they kill you. If you're a Shia, they kill you. If you're an Iraqi police officer, they kill you. If you're an Iraqi soldier, they kill you. If you're a Coptic Christian, they kill you. If you're a Jew, they kill you. If you're a Jordanian pilot, they kill you. Obama says they're a death cult. No, they're not a death cult. They're using terror as the tactic to provoke you as well as to recruit others where this is an attractive alternative. This is an adventure to get even, to get revenge on their enemies. And they have enemies that go back decades and centuries. This is to them a holy war, a jihad, a struggle, the violent struggle against the infidels, whether they be Shia, Jew, or Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, you name it. If you're not Sunni and their version or sect of Sunni, you most likely will end up dead. If you're lucky, you might have a family or someone that would pay ransom, but that is rare. Most of these people that they kidnap and capture are dead. They don't have the resources, the time, the resources, or frankly, the interest in keeping these people alive. That's why you're going to continue seeing these videos for years until the Sunni regimes in this area have had enough of it and go on the offensive and kill them. The United States should stay out. We shouldn't be sending any combat troops, including special forces, or for that matter, the Central Intelligence Agency. We have over 5,000 troops in Iraq right now, and that is climbing. And we are engaged in launching missiles from both drones and aircraft, F-16s as well as bombers. It's not that we're not doing nothing. It's that our strategy will never win. It's running out the clock. It's strategic patience. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, every time we kill one of these Islamic statists, they recruit five others. We're playing their game. You don't play their game. You lay out your own strategy. You don't announce it. And it's up to the countries in this area, Sunnis, starting with Saudi Arabia, also Egypt, Jordan, and Turkey. And we need to go on they need to go on the offensive and stop it. The problem is you have individuals in these countries that have benefit from and support of the Islamic State. It is not going to be easy to get these countries, these regimes, to go on the offensive. But the last thing we should do is intervene ourselves. Put in context, we have in the United States homicides of about 12,000 every year. We have automobile accidents under 50,000. They're spread over the entire United States. A lot of the homicides are gang-related and drug-related. And gangs are a problem across the United States. You don't hear about them that much, but they are. And I view the Islamic State as a gang, a very violent gang. And the problem is there are no police, there's no military in the towns that they're operating in that can stop them. They're out of control, and they have leadership that understands the importance of getting their message, their propaganda out, and it's succeeding. We have a lot of Americans that are really upset with the Islamic State. But put in context, how many Americans have died directly due to the Islamic State? By my count, it's 4. I could be off, but it's certainly less than 10. And how many were killed by homicides in the United States last year? 12,000. And a good portion of that are due to gangs, drive-by shootings, and rival gangs shooting at each another. Go to Chicago. We have a gang problem in Dallas, but nowhere near as bad as Chicago, Los Angeles. Where's the threat? If you're an American, it's not from the Islamic State. You have to put yourself in danger by going to the Middle East and getting yourself kidnapped. Now, no one willingly tries to get kidnapped, but it happens. My advice is stay out of harm's way. Don't go to the Middle East. Tourism is way down in the Middle East, including Egypt. I wouldn't visit there. I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't visit there, period, including Israel. I know a lot of people like to go to Israel. Let me spend a minute on that. In the south, you have Hamas, shooting rockets into Israel, Palestinians, and they're doing exactly what the Islamic State would do if we were to intervene in Iraq and ultimately Syria. They would go into hiding. They would mix amongst the people. Unless you have intelligence as to where they are and can pinpoint them, the only way you're going to have to stop them is what the Israelis had to do a little over a month ago. Go block by block, building by building, floor by floor, room by room, and kill them one by one. And the problem when you do that, they plant bombs all over the place. You have to literally weed them out. What was Hamas doing? They were randomly picking people off the street and killing them and claiming they were in cahoots with the Israelis. Yet most of the press is focused on what the Israelis are doing. The Israelis are defending their country against Hamas that have the same terrorist attack tactics as the Islamic State. Now that's the south. In the north, you have the Iranian pawn Hezbollah that's supporting the Assad regime. They're doing the same thing. Now, they somewhat have their hands filled because they are being attacked by Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, and to a lesser extent, the Islamic State, but they're supporting the regime of Assad that are Alawites. What has happened? Hundreds of thousands of people in Syria have fled the country, as well as Lebanon. They've gone to adjoining states, such as Egypt, such as Jordan, to a lesser extent, Saudi Arabia. And that makes a point. It's best to stop this in the early stages, if you can. But when it gets at a critical mass, and some would say they're already there, it gets more difficult. Could the United States go in and stop this? Absolutely. It's not a question of not having the means. It's a question of what the American people want. And what they don't want is a long war where the United States intervenes again, and you have hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops in Iraq and Syria. That's what they don't want. Now, you have some call-in so-called experts. I heard one, and I respected the guy, but he said, well, we could do it. He was asked, well, how many would it take? Oh, 10,000. I about fell out of bed. 10,000? Now, he immediately qualified it. Well, that's 10,000, but we couldn't go into the cities. Excuse me, genius. Where do you think the Islamic State is going to be? Fighting you in a conventional war out in a desert in western Iraq? No, they're going to be in the cities. And then the host, well, if we wanted to take them on the cities, oh, that would take a lot more. Yeah, hundreds of thousands, at least 100,000. We don't know exactly how many troops they have or followers, whether it's 5, 10,000, or 50. But it's going to involve whether we do it, which we shouldn't, or the Sunnis do it, an alliance of these countries. It's going to take tens of thousands of troops being there for years. They're not going to surrender, because they know if they surrender, bang, we're going to kill them. Payback time. And that's what you need to understand. This goes back ages. This is revenge. Their family rivalries, and their tribal, and their religious. And we want to get in the middle of this for oil? Really? Why? We got plenty of oil from other countries and this country, as well as coal and natural gas. Most of the oil in Iraq is in southern Iraq, controlled by the Shias. Yes, we do have some activity in northern Iraq where the Islamic State is, Mosul being the key one, and Kirkuk. So as much as I agree with the call, the people that call in and the talk show hosts that want to kill them, the question is who should do the killing? And as far as I'm concerned, it should be the Sunnis killing the Sunnis. And especially the nations that initially provided this group with arms and money. And that's Saudi Arabia and Qatar and others. I don't want to see one single American killed because of this. It probably has already happened. It's only a question of time, especially when you're talking larger and larger numbers for longer periods of time. Right now, supposedly, all they're doing largely is training. But we were doing that in Iraq. We provided them all of these arms and all of these training. And what did the Iraqis do? They ran for it. And who has the arms now? The Islamic State. You want to repeat this disaster? No. Have Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, Qatar, Oman, Bahrain form an alliance with the sole objective to take out the Islamic State. And why we're at it, we need to divide Iraq up into Sunni and Shia and Kurds. That would solve a lot of the problem. Not all, but a lot. The problem we would still have is most of the oil is in southern Iraq, some in northern Iraq. And the Sunnis and the Kurds want a cut of the oil in southern Iraq. And remember, Baghdad has, although predominantly Shia, there are large neighborhoods that are Sunni. And the Kurds don't want to deal with either the Iraqis or whether they're Shia or Sunni. The Kurds really need their own nation. The problem is Turkey and Iran, as well as Syria and Iraq, won't let them have it. They're a people in search of a nation. And ladies and gentlemen, that illustrates the problem. This has a long history, and it started with the dividing up of the Middle East after World War I by the British and the French, largely to get at oil and to control these areas so they had access to oil and free movement across them. The American people are not going to want to send hundreds of thousands or even tens of thousands of U.S. troops back into Iraq. We've been there. We've done that. It has cost us thousands of lives, trillions of dollars, not to mention the many, many Iraqis that were killed. You're supposed to learn from your past mistakes, not repeat them. And as much as you want to get emotional and get a release to say, let's bomb them, it's total war, like going after the Nazis or the Japanese. Let me remind you, we invaded them. And don't bring up 9-1-1. Yeah, Al-Qaeda was responsible, but there's no evidence that the Iraqis were. However, 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. Did we attack Saudi Arabia? No. You need to develop a strategy and a plan. not react emotionally. Because when you do that, you are playing your opponent's game. You're falling into a trap. They're deliberately trying to provoke you with this propaganda. So wake up, wake up. With that, I have to end today's show. Thank you for listening. And now my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.